Hi again, Medical Education Podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva, the editor-in-chief of the journal. I have the pleasure today of speaking with Professor Paul Worley, who's the Dean of Medicine at Flinders University. We'll be discussing a paper entitled A Typology of Longitudinal Integrated Clerkships that he and his co-authors have coming out in the September 2016 issue of Medical Education. And as is the norm, we had a chance to discuss the weather just before I got online with you and discovered that in Vancouver and Adelaide we are experiencing the exact same temperatures, but everybody sees it as balmy here and far too cold in southern Australia. So thanks for taking your mittens off, Paul. I'm glad you had the time to chat with me today.
No, it's a pleasure, Kevin.
This paper, as you know, but our listeners won't have a chance to know yet, is a massive collaborative between an incredible number of people. Maybe the best place to start is to just ask you the context in which this was generated, and if you could tell us a bit about this consortium of longitudinal integrated clerkships.
Yeah, sure. This paper actually started back in 2010. And Ian Cooper and I were musing over the fact that in the discussions amongst the longitudinal integrated clerkship community, often known as CLIC, there was a lot of debate about, well, exactly how much integration do you need? What is integration? What is longitudinal? And how long do you need to be longitudinal? And is our definition appropriate? And what's happening with all these new programs that seem to be taking up the LIC approach? And we were trying to work out, how do you answer these questions, the problem of randomization, bedevils medical education research? And it occurred to us that one potential way of answering some of these questions was to use the natural experiment that was going on around the world of many schools starting LICs, but all of them being slightly different in the way they were doing it, to try and tease out some of those underlying principles that may or may not be helping LICs work. So we went to the CLIC conference in South Dakota in 2011 and put it to the conference attendees. Would you like to be part of a multi-center international study on longitudinal integrated clerkships? And they unanimously said yes. And in fact, not only they, but a lot of colleagues who found out about it afterwards said yes. So we ended up with 44 medical schools. And in this paper, 54 authors of a multi-center study looking at a typology of longitudinal integrated clerkships.
Well, and so thinking about that history, even going back before the start of this specific project, it strikes me as a good case study of what often happens with innovation in our field, and that somebody puts an idea forward, it gets a label, other people start to adopt it, and before you know it, we're all using the same term without any consistency. Was that a concern that the label's being misused in some ways, or was it really more just an indication that nobody knew what was going on under this large umbrella?
Yeah, probably both, Kevin. So the simplest comparison that we had was the PBL term, both three-letter acronyms. And all of the controversy that's gone on about, is this proper PBL or is this not proper PBL? And then what are the outcomes of PBL and what are the outcomes that are attributable to PBL? What are really just the relationship with your tutor? What is really just about groups? What is really just about problem formulation and problem solving? What's just about scaffolding your knowledge? So, yeah, over time, I guess there's been a theoretical framework that's been developed around PBL, which has enabled people, if you like, to try and get to some of the underlying principles that may be making PBL work. I don't think we have had that yet in the LIC movement. And you're right, a lot of people are now starting to see an LIC as something, in inverted commas, good to have in a high-quality medical program. Not necessarily sure why that goodness is, except that the single institution studies that are coming out are promoting some great academic results, some great workforce results, some great personal development results for the students and some great feedback from teachers. But again, it's not underpinned by a really robust understanding of why or a theoretical framework. And we're not really sure that we're comparing apples with apples or oranges with oranges when we're even looking at different LIC or when we're comparing an LIC with what's commonly referred to as a traditional rotation-based program. So for all of those reasons, the thought leaders in the LIC movement, in CLIC, figured we've got to take some responsibility for this and start working on it now rather than waiting 20 years down the track and falling into the same difficulties that the PBL groups, where people have said, well, it all seems to be pretty good and you can't really tell any difference. We didn't want to be investing a lot of effort in something that eventually people, through the diversity of application, there really wasn't any learning that could help the field progress.
Right. You mentioned thought leaders or leaders in this field. Anybody who's tracked LICs will know that you've been there from the beginning and have personally invested quite a bit in trying to develop and understand these programs. If I were to ask you to think back to before you conducted this study, what would you have put forward as the defining characteristics of an LIC?
Well, I'd use the definition that we agreed to in Cambridge, Massachusetts, probably over 10 years ago now, which is that there's the longitudinality. In other words, there's a length of time that the students are engaged in a clerkship, that they are integrated across different disciplines, that they are learning from a group of patients over that period of time, a group of clinicians over that period of time. In essence, my theoretical framework for this is something we've developed at Flinders around relationship-based learning about symbiosis. But I can say that from our individual perspective. The dilemma is that's just the Flinders perspective. I'm not sure how that applies in other institutions, and that was part of what we wanted to find out in doing this study.
And were you surprised after looking across those 44 institutions by the variability? Or was there anything that stood out to you as being particularly informative in terms of your own conception of how different people were thinking about these technologies?
Well, there's two things about this research. There's the research that we're able to publish in this first paper, and there's the experience of actually undertaking the research with a group of 54 collaborators. There are two things that actually there are some remarkable commonalities across the programs that I think will be very helpful in future research going forward now, looking more at the details. So the typology is looking at the length of time, the degree of integration, the locations and the supervisors. And we've really been able to come to a quite simple typology internationally for LICs. This is only the first step. What that now enables us to potentially do is to look at all of the LICs, say, that are comprehensive, that look at all of the disciplines in a clinical year and actually take up most of that clinical year, and to look at, well, what are the factors inside those comprehensive LICs that are aiding career choice, that are aiding academic progress, that are aiding professional development. We can look at comparing the comprehensive LICs with the blended LICs, the ones that are shorter and have rotations added onto them to make up the full year, to see, well, how much longitudinality do you need? How long do you need to have in an integrated approach to be able to get the benefits? How much integration do you need? Do you need two disciplines, three, four, five, six? All of these questions that we're looking at answering. So there was that commonality. What really came out, though, in the research was the common enthusiasm that the pioneers of this approach to education have in their different institutions, and the common agenda to be improving medical education for the benefit of students, preceptors, and patients. Patients in particular was often the driving force that we found when we were discussing our research and discussing our program. So that experience of actually working across this number of collaborators and this number of schools, I think, has been a very empowering and encouraging process for the research team.
your comments about additional work that needs to be done and questions that might be answered now that you've gone through this effort of laying out the topology, lay out a fairly clear direction for continued energies. And maybe I'll end by asking you to reflect on whether or not you have any advice, having gone through this experience of bringing together one of the largest teams I've seen for a particular research project. What do you have to offer as insight to people who are trying to manage teams like this and trying to enable multi-institutional research that might address questions that couldn't be gotten at with any one location?
Well, there's a couple of things, Kevin. First of all, it's possible. That's the first thing I can say, is it's possible to do. So we no longer in medical education research can say that we really can only do small studies because that's the field we're in. No, we can do multi-institution studies in the same way as the clinical trials groups can do multi-institutional studies, in the same way as other fields of science can do multi-institutional studies. So the first thing is, it's possible. The second thing is, boy, it takes time. So don't underestimate the time that it will take, nor the interesting quirks that you will find along the way in terms of language and culture that, particularly in a field like education, have a major impact. So just what do we define as a course, as opposed to a clerkship, as opposed to a rotation, as opposed to a paper, as opposed to a topic? You know, every institution and nation has different ways of using our language. We found Delphi methods really helpful in working out how we could ask our questions and trying to make them as clear and robust as possible. Look out for egos and be prepared to share rather than own. That was really important for us. So the process of working out, well, how are we actually going to get an authorship that reflects the fact that 54 people have contributed to this research, and yet probably only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 or so will end up being the first, second, third, fourth, fifth authors. And how do we work that in a way that is respectful of the input that everybody has had? And so we've had to work on how we are going to do that for this paper, how we're going to do that for our future papers, so that we are actually a collaborative and everyone is able to gain credit. So, yeah, be prepared to share, be prepared to learn, and be prepared to have to at times sort of herd the cats when 15 people say that you should use has and the other 15 say you should use have and another think that it should be had. So, you know, these sort of things that are difficult enough when you've got 4 authors to a paper, when you've got 54, be prepared for that. But boy, it's worth it. It's been such an amazing ride and I think has developed a real collaborative wisdom amongst the team and a collaborative enthusiasm amongst the team to go on from here and do a whole lot more studies together.
That's great and holds a tremendous amount of promise, and it's easy to see how this really was a Herculean effort to pull together. As you said, just collaborating with 2 or 3 people on things like that can be an incredible challenge. So congratulations to you and to all 53 others who contributed. Really is quite an amazing feat.
Yeah, they're a wonderful team.
I will finish off by just reminding listeners that I've been speaking with Paul Worley about a paper called The Typology of Longitudinal and Integrated Clerkships. There's obviously a lot more detail in terms of the results in the paper than we're able to talk about in a short period of time, but we both felt it was quite valuable to reflect a bit more at a meta level on how this sort of research is conducted, and I certainly hope that it has a value to you as you embark upon your own research and development activities. So congratulations once again, Paul, and thank you very much for your time. I look forward to seeing where this leads you.
Thanks, Kevin.